I am always constantly impressed by the guests that I have on this podcast. They are all so well-spoken, intelligent, and motivated. And I feel like they give such great feedback for our listeners. Today, I am beyond impressed by our guest because she has done so much in such a short amount of time. And I love where her inspiration for the brand came from. Today on the podcast, we have the brilliant Emma Butler. Now, Emma is the CEO and founder of a brand called Intimately, and their tagline is where fashion meets function. But really, Emma was so inspired by her mom, who has a disability, and she wanted to create undergarments like bras and underwear that someone with a disability could actually put on themselves. When you think about this adaptive clothing, there really hasn't been anything on the market that's enabled people to be fully functional for themselves. And I just love that Emma has created this company and that she was inspired by her mom to do so. Now, not only has Intimately actually been featured in amazing publications like Who, What, Where, Cosmopolitan, Glamour, but what I love about Emma too is she's constantly seeking opportunities to grow the brand. And one of the things that she's done that I think is so smart is build a community around Intimately, the brand. And so it's allowing other women to get advice or life hacks from other women with disabilities, which I just think is amazing. So not only has she elevated and built this entire brand for herself, but she's also been able to build this community where women can talk candidly about what they're going through. And I just think she's so smart. I just love that she's inspired by her mom to build this brand. And then also too, that she's been able to scale it with the experience that she's had thus far as a really young entrepreneur. So congrats, Emma, on all of your incredible success. I know we cannot wait to watch you rise and grow as time goes on. And I can't wait for people to listen to this episode and learn the steps that you've taken to build Intimately. So I hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and I'll catch you on the flip side. Hey, Emma, welcome to the Next Big Thing podcast.
Hi, Sam. Thank you so much for having me.
I think you might be the youngest entrepreneur that we've had on the show, which is really cool. I didn't realize that until we just started talking, but you graduated from Brown University last June, you said, May?
Yes. So I'm just 22, turning 23 in a couple days.
Amazing. Okay. And you've started this company called Intimately. Tell us about this company, where the idea came from.
Absolutely. So Intimately creates clothing for women with disabilities, and we're a marketplace. And I had no idea that I was ever going to start a business. I was interested in fashion. I went to Brown to study visual arts, but I had always been interested in fashion. About 10 years ago, my mom became diagnosed with a few different chronic illnesses, which left her disabled. And she had a hard time finding new clothes. Her dexterity was limited and her mobility. And so it became harder to put shirts on over her head, buckle those little hooks and eyes on the back of bras. And when she would look for like disability clothing or Velcro clothing or elderly clothing, now we call it adaptive clothing, which is like clothing that's easier to get on. At this point, 10 years ago, she only found really ugly medical looking things that were frankly, it was a dehumanizing shopping experience. And I always kept that experience with me. And when I got to Brown and I joined the fashion club, I met other women with the same disability as my mom and other disabilities. And just chatting with them, like young women do, about what we're going to wear to a party, what we're going to wear the first day of class, I learned that they have the same challenges that my mom had relating to dressing and shopping. And I thought, I think I can make a solution for my friends and my mom that allows them to get dressed really easily, super functional, but also really stylish and doesn't look medical. And so I started a blog where I wrote about my favorite adaptive apparel clothing. This was the same time that Tommy Hilfiger launched their adaptive line, Target, Zappos. And then eventually the blog turned into a marketplace. And I did a Kickstarter. I found a few small mom and pop brands from around the world that were selling adaptive intimates. And I was specifically interested in bras and underwear, made a marketplace. And that's how Intimately was born. And I did that during college. And then I decided to pursue it full time last spring during quarantine. And I just worked on it and was going to class, graduated in May. And here I am just about a year later working full time on it.
Yeah, working full time, by the way, for people listening, she's in Paris, which is whatever, not that cool. We don't care about it. Okay. What I think is really interesting is a lot of times we have entrepreneurs on the show who have a spark of an idea that just comes to them, whether it's like a shower thought or something that they're doing in their day to day. But yours was almost like a slow burn a little bit more is what it sounds like. And you had your mom who was seeking adaptive clothing and undergarments and couldn't find them. And then you had these conversations at Brown. And what were the common themes that people were complaining about that just, you were just like, how is this possible that this doesn't exist? You said like the bra straps, but then was there anything else that had like some consistency to it? They were like, I'm going to pursue, like, when did you know that it was going to be like a lingerie line?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And the thing with disabilities is that there's so many vast varieties of disabilities, and you can be in a wheelchair or you can be an amputee, and you have very different diagnoses and medications, or if you have a chronic illness. But a lot of the same pain points were the same when it comes to adaptive apparel. I kept hearing over and over again and experiencing this with my friends that zippers and buttons and hooks and eyes are really hard. Things needed to be stretchy and easily adjustable. So if you have a thin arm or muscular atrophy, you can on one leg and not the other, you can have an adjustable pant leg, those types of things. So I kept hearing those things over and over again. I said, I think I can do something technical with this and create, and, you know, fashion as a technology. But then I kept hearing over and over again, I just want to feel beautiful. I want to feel sexy. I don't want to be infantilized, you know, as a disabled woman. And paired with those two things, I thought lingerie is the most complex garment to put on. It's also closest to your body. Hooks and eyes are hard, even for able-bodied women. Bras suck, and we all know it. You know, we all know those commercials or anything where it's like the woman takes a bra off at the end of the day and she sighs in a big relief.
We all know that really well.
And then also, not only was there a technical challenge with lingerie, but also there was this aspect of, you know, a lot of self-confidence and beauty and desirability comes with lingerie. And I kept hearing my girlfriends say, I'm not desirable, or why aren't there any disabled women in sexy magazines or being portrayed as really, really beautiful and desirable. And so I wanted to marry those two things, the technology of undergarments and intimates and the sentiments they hold. And so I was just so excited about that idea that I could not only make dressing easier for my girlfriends and my mom, but I could also bring this sense of beauty and fashion and self-confidence into their lives. And so that really drove me over the edge to start Intimately.
That's great. I love that you're really evaluating these common themes that you're seeing within these conversations that you're having. I cannot wait to talk about the technology side of things, because what you have is fascinating. So you have this front open magnetic bra, you have side opening undies, and then you have period panties. Where did these ideas come from specifically, and how many iterations and like prototypes did you go through to get to this point for each?
So all of these, the things on the website that you currently see are third party brands. So I didn't design any of it. I found small mom and pop brands, one woman out of London that makes the bras, another woman out of New York that makes the underwear. And they were like on the 80th page of Google, really hard to find, no models. And I decided to go to a one-stop shop to put it all together.
Smart. That's so smart. That's like the best possible path that you could take versus trying to go through, create patents for something, get prototypes done. It was like already done. You just had to white label it.
Exactly. Well, so that's what step one was. But then I thought, you know, these aren't as sexy as they could be. They're not as functional and they're not that affordable. And so actually for the last year, my team and I have been working on product development on releasing a six line collection, two bras, two underwears, and a top and bottom of a sleepwear set that we believe is easier to get on, much more functional, way sexier, and at a more affordable price point. And so we're moving a little bit away from the marketplace idea and trying to get our own technology and our own patents out there, just because I think that I can do better than what's currently on the market.
That's amazing. What was the process like with some of these partners then when you found them? I love that you say that they're on like the 70th page of Google, because it just goes to show how like in depth some of the research has to be to find what you're really looking for. But what was your process like with them, and how did you convince them to leverage what they had built?
Yeah, I mean, I just sent them a cold email. I said, "Hi, I'm a student. My mom is disabled. I want to give you some, I want to elevate your brand. I'm going to buy all of your products at wholesale." So they knew they were going to make money off of me. And I said, "I'm going to do an amazing photo shoot that's going to bring your brand new, that's going to elevate your brand, basically. And using my company, my marketplace, you're going to get a lot of attention." And that's what ended up happening. We've been in Forbes, Glamour, Cosmopolitan, Women's Wear Daily, Entrepreneur, all these magazines. And we're just the marketplace. But because these brands don't know how to do that PR or put together a beautiful photo shoot or put together a good, really good website with more than just one pair of underwear on it, we were able to provide that for them.
That's amazing. That's awesome. Good for you. What about the material specifically? So you have like the tech side of things, but what about understanding what materials would feel the best and work the best?
Yeah, that's been a challenge that as we produce this our own line right now, that's what I've been working a lot with. You know, there's everything from folks with autism or on the spectrum have sensory issues or sensory sensitivities. So I want to make sure that there's no tags, there's no seams, you know, all these other things. But then on top of that, the fabric has to be able to hold magnets or hold our new fastening technology and stretch at a certain capability while still remaining sensory friendly. So I think down the line, we're going to develop our own textiles and our own fabric, because it's definitely an area that we need more innovation in. But you're absolutely right. The textile aspect in this manufacturing round has been a real challenge.
That's so interesting. What about when you finally had pulled something together with the tech and some of the textiles? How did you go about testing and getting feedback from people on like the first initial pieces that you had?
Yeah, so we have a team. My team is both disabled and able-bodied women. I have about 7 women on my team. And so at first, it's us working on it and knowing from our own experiences, either as disabled folks or caregivers or other things, what's going to work. And then we share it with a few members of our pilot program community. That way, because it's still, we don't want to get the technology out there and have someone else steal it, because there are big brands moving into the space. You know, Nordstrom's has a new adaptive line where they are not making it themselves, but they're hosting small brands the same way we are.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so is Aerie. They're hosting things that you can see on our site. So we know that there's big players trying to move into the space. So we have a really tight group of women that try on our clothing and of all different disabilities and sizes and functionality so that we can make sure that it works. And I would love to do giant testing, but you know, I can only, as long as I get a diverse group of women from all different sizes and backgrounds, able to try our technology, try the way it fits, feel beautiful on them, that's going to be good. And then we'll release the technology, have it patented. And then our first line, we'll do it in a small batch, only about 1,000 units. And that's kind of our test run. You know, and but we also already have the patented technology. So we're not just like giving it out to folks, if that makes sense. So it's a little bit of a hard line to walk.
No, I think that's good. I mean, I think you have to be protective of what you're creating, especially if it's unique and, you know, other huge retailers are going after that same space for sure. Let's talk about your team, because when I was doing my research, I was like, wow, this is so impressive that you've built out this team of people. How did you build this team, and when did you decide that you needed more than just you?
Yeah. So I've been really lucky where I think I've barely done any outreach to or post job postings to find a team. Almost everybody is inbound coming to me wanting to work on the team. That includes my first hire, which was in January of last year after we did the Kickstarter. Her mom is disabled and she found our Kickstarter and was like, she studies fashion at Cornell, focuses on adaptive fashion. And she says, she just had to be part of this team. She ended up staying with me in Paris, which has been great. And then our CFO, Julia, who is chief of staff at Alibaba North America, and also the lead financial analyst for Disney Plus, reached out to me and was like, I would love to be your CFO. Same with our designer, who's designed lines for Jessica Simpson and, Vince Camuto and Lucky Brand. She was looking for just more meaning to her work. She had been designing for the last 10 years. And she was like, I can't just create another bra that's going to be eventually going to the landfill. You know, I want to make something meaningful for people. And then other women have just DM'd me or reached out to me. You know, our Instagram's growing every day, and that's been a great way of reaching people. And we get a lot of inbound requests to work. And so it's been really great. I get to kind of choose an A+ team of disabled and able-bodied women who are really committed to this and ready to make big change.
Love it. Yeah, I love that. Have you found, just curious to your opinion on that, on this, do you find that when you're in this space, obviously you're doing something that's really benefiting the greater good, it's purpose-driven. Do you find that more and more people are seeking to work for companies that are more purpose-driven, that have a mission behind them, than just some of these like bigger corporate jobs that people could also have a choice of going to work at?
It's a good question. You know, coming from Brown, you know, everyone was, if they were in tech, they got jobs at Google or Twitter or Apple or Adobe. And then if they were in finance, it was Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley or Bain. And so in that sense, I was a little frustrated at Brown because I saw all these really amazing, talented students go work for big corporations. And but then as I'm in this social impact startup space, I definitely have met an amazing group of people. But I don't think I think it's a little divided. And I think that there are great people out there that could be making their own great startups or be amazing first team members that are at these big companies, and I'm sure they're doing great work for them, but it's really a shame that they can't come over to the social impact side.
Yeah, right. Because there's so much, it's growing so much. And I know that there's a lot of people that want to start heading in that direction. So now that you've built out this team, what is scaling the company looked like for you?
Yeah. So right now we're about to release our own line. So that's step number one. We're also in the middle of raising a seed round of about 500K. We have part of it, about a little less than half committed from some great angel investors. And so that's going to help us really scale up our R&D side of the team, really go into product development mode and just keep cranking out the best fascinating technology. So then eventually we can move out of intimates and into other types of clothing like shirts, pants, that whole gist of everything. And then from there, we really want to establish ourselves as the best adaptive apparel designers in the world, the best adaptive apparel designers. So I really am putting a lot of effort into my design team. But then also, we're really going to scale up our community. And we've had partnerships with the Christopher Reeves Foundation, MS Focus, the Spina Bifida Association, Cerebral Palsy Foundation, and really just creating a safe community space for these women to come together and talk on our platform about anything from sex and disability to fashion hacks, beauty hacks, adaptive travel hacks, everything, not just their diagnosis or their doctor's appointments or their surgery. So that's kind of like the two avenues we're going, because there's so much more than intimates. And it's a great opportunity to bring women together.
Right. Yeah. It sounds like you also learned that when you're telling the story about your mom, having her try on shirts and just realizing that there wasn't a lot of options out there. So that's a super smart direction to head in. What about going through funding? Can you tell listeners a little bit about that? Because I'm always interested to hear different stories. And how did you even decide that that was something that you wanted?
Yeah, so that's a good question. Well, to go back to how I decided that I wanted to go the VC angel route and not just be another boutique was, A, I really wanted scale. I want this to, like, on our team, we say that we're like starting the wave for and joining the wave for an inclusion revolution. You know, I want my daughter in the future, if she's disabled, to never know the difference of what it's like to have to search and search the way my mother did for adaptive apparel and not feel beautiful or feel desexualized or infantilized just because she's disabled. So I knew that it had to be bigger than a boutique. I really wanted to make a huge motion. I wanted to do big partnerships, work with big brands that want to move into the space. So I knew a lot of capital was needed. And I know the R&D is really expensive and intensive. So that's one reason. Also, I was while I was in college, I went through Y Combinator as like the head of marketing on a 4-person team on a B2B SaaS product. And we raised a lot of money on demo day. And Y Combinator just taught me a lot about thinking really big, what venture capital dollars can do. And I thought, if I can help build this B2B SaaS product and get all these big named clients and raise a lot of money from the top VCs, I can do that for a company like Intimately that's going to make real change in the world and real good, even though it's not B2B SaaS. And so that was kind of my point of why I wanted to raise with angels and VCs. And, you know, there's other big, you know, people don't think clothing and fashion, and then they don't think VC. But Eloquy, I think that's how you say it, the plus size marketplace, did a bunch of rounds and then just was acquired by Walmart for $100 million. Peanut, the online community platform for pregnant women, and talking about fertility, which is kind of similar to our platform where women can talk about sex and disability as disabled women, just raised $12 million in their Series A. You know,
wow.
Love has
amazing.
Raised a lot. Yes, and True & Co., of course, was acquired by PBH. And so there is space for this, and I think that people need to re-examine the way they think about fashion and technology and how and is intersected with VC and angel funding.
I didn't realize that so many of those other companies went through that. That's crazy. One of my favorite bras is True & Co. So when you said that, I was like, oh, that's awesome. That's so interesting. And where did you learn about everything that you just talked about? Like, how did you just have to figure it out yourself when you were in school and you were interested in going into an entrepreneurial career? Like, was it networking? Was it being part of Y Combinator? Like, what was it that like helped you learn all these things? Cause I feel like you know more than some of the other guests that we have on the podcast. It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I came from, you know, Brown, you don't have to, unlike any other school, really, you don't have to take any general eds. So I didn't ever take a math class, didn't take a science course, didn't have to take a writing course. I just filled my schedule with French courses and visual arts courses, and which kind of did me wrong. And that was the first 2 years. And then I thought, intimately this idea developed more. I met really cool people that taught me a little bit about entrepreneurship. And I was like, oh my God, I just wasted 2 years and I didn't take a single entrepreneurship course or finance course. I don't even know how to do a P&L. I don't know what VC means or what a term sheet looks like. And so I was really in a hard spot, but I ended up taking a course. It's Brown's notorious hardest course. It's by this professor who went to HBS and exited a bunch of companies. And it's called Engineering 1010. And it's the introduction to entrepreneurship. And
interesting.
It was the hardest course I've ever taken.
Oh my gosh.
Rewarding. And we went over everything. And I learned so much from that course. and became really close with the professor. I'm editing his book. And I just kept saying, give me every book and I will read it. And I literally stayed during my junior year. I didn't go out at all. I stayed in my bedroom, in my dorm room, and just read and went to the library and picked up every book he recommended, listened to all the podcasts that I could find. And I wish I could have found this one, but this was, I don't think you had started this yet because it was a few years ago. And just taught myself everything. And then I studied abroad in Paris, happened to be placed next to, be living next to Station F, fell in love with Station F in this atmosphere of entrepreneurship, and applied to every job that spoke English. Ended up getting this job at this B2B SaaS company. We moved from Paris to San Francisco. It was very sad because I wanted to stay in Paris. And then we ended up going through YC, and I really didn't know anything at the beginning, but I was really lucky to have an amazing boss and amazing coworkers who explained everything to me. And I just unrelentingly asked questions. I learned everything about SEO and team structure. That's how I was introduced to Notion, which is now my best friend. Everything about how to grow a team, how to scale, how to fund, term sheets, what it means to be a startup that has big ambitions and be in the valley and all of those things. So I would say the combination between that one course at Brown and the luck that I had that just I ended up getting a job at this random B2B SaaS company that hired me, even though I had no past experience. And then we happened to get into YC were two big factors that taught me a lot.
That's awesome. What about the books that you were reading? Do you have like one book recommendation that you were like, when I read this, it changed my life?
Yeah, I would say Purple Cow by Seth Godin. The whole purpose of the book is that you have to be outstanding and you can't just be a brown cow or like a spotted cow. You have to be a purple cow. And that hits me a lot. And I think about that often, like, am I different enough? Is our technology innovative enough? You know, all the markets are so saturated. And when students at Brown come to me, I'm now a mentor for this class that I was talking to you about, and they all have to, make their own business proposals and all these things. And they come to me and they say, oh, for our group project, we'd like to do X, Y, and Z. And, or girls reach out to me on LinkedIn and they say, I want to start a fashion brand too. And I say, there are so many fashion brands out there. There are so many startups. Are you really that different? Are you really like a purple cow? And so I'm always challenging my levels of innovation and I always want to be different and crazy. And I challenge my team to think of really crazy, wacky ideas, anything, because I think that in order to really make change, we need to really be innovative.
Good for you. I have this challenge a lot as well, because I think there's a lot of people who have amazing ideas, but they don't really fully vet the ideas to see if they're game-changing ideas. What would be your advice for people listening who maybe are kind of like stuck in their own mind and think they have a really good idea and are not sure if it's a purple cow or not?
That's a really good idea. I did so much market research. You know, I can tell you every single adaptive pant that's on the market right now and every adaptive bra. I know every shoe that comes out by Zappos or Nike or whatever that's adaptive. And I know that there is nothing like what we're about to launch in our line. And so I would say do a really deep competitive analysis. And if there's too many brands like you, that's a big sign. And it's not good enough to say, oh, our branding is a little different, or, we're targeting a little bit younger of a customer. That's not enough to me. You really
need to. Oh, I love that. Yeah. Oh, it's so true. Like, okay. So then what is enough? Like when you're working with this class as a mentor now, how do you challenge them to get to a place where it is enough?
Yeah. Well, another thing is these teams think really small. And so one of the requirements is in the business plan that you have to create, it has to reach $100 million by year five. So you can't think of creating some sort of coffee shop chain or anything. It has to be really big and really disruptive. And so that's the first thing. You know, it's fine to create a small boutique if that's what you want to do. But if you want to enter the startup space and get VC funding, you have to think really big in terms of revenues, multiple streams of revenue, and really innovative. And so that's one challenge I would think to say is just, you know, when you're looking at your financial projections, who's your target customer? Who are the early adopters? What's your beachhead market? And how many people can you get behind this idea? And yeah.
Wow. That's a hard thing to go through. Good for you for helping other budding entrepreneurs figure that out, because that's something I think a lot of people in general struggle with as entrepreneurs, is figuring out how to position themselves, and then also really challenging and gut checking, like, is this truly innovative? So I love that you think that way, because I think that's hard to find in this space. I want to, you touched on this earlier, this community that you've built called Sisterhood. Where did you get the idea to build a community? I know a lot of brands who are in the startup space, and then also bigger brands, are trying to figure out if they should create a community, like on Facebook groups, or have something that's like a paying community. Where did the idea come from? And then can you just tell people a little bit more of how it works?
Yeah, I always think it's a little funny when brands don't have a community from their inception and then they like tag it on. I'm like, oh, is this just for...
Yeah, it's almost like, why did you build a brand?
Yeah, is this for customer retention? I don't really understand.
Yes.
And I can't remember exactly where this idea came from, this community aspect, the same way that I can remember, you know, my experience with my mom and my friends. But I just knew that, you know, when I actually did a lot of research into the community section and learning that all these online forums talked about, for folks with disabilities, talked about, were either disability and diagnosis specific. There wasn't just like one overall arching group. And they talked a lot about medical needs. And I was thinking so much about how I can change lives of these women by making them feel more beautiful. And the same way that I can talk to, and I just knew that, I knew that I wanted to create a space where these women could talk about how they felt, and there was nothing else like it on the market. And part of the, experience of living with a disability is that you're isolated. You know, you might not know other folks in your town with the same disability as you, you know, bars and schools aren't always accessible in a physical sense. So it's harder to make friends. And so the digital age is really special for folks with disabilities who have to stay at home. And I thought, I can really leverage that and make this one place where after these women buy my bras, or they're learning more about sex, or they are learning more about beauty and love and self-confidence, they can come and chat and make new friends, because they can't go to your local bar and, you know, when there's no wheelchair accessible ramp or wheelchair accessible parking, for example. And so I was thinking a lot about that. And then also, the more research I did about sex and disability specifically, was that, you know, folks with disabilities are the least likely to get sex education. Doctors will say,
"Whoa, I didn't know that."
Yeah. If you've seen the documentary Crip Camp, one of the women, I believe she has cerebral palsy, she was undiagnosed for a long time with an STI, because even though the symptoms were very clear, the doctors just couldn't wrap their head around that she might have had sex. And so there's this huge gap between information about sex and sexual wellness and health for folks with disabilities. And that goes so closely with what we create right now, lingerie, that I wanted to create an open space where no one was preaching at folks with disabilities, but they could amplify their voices, talk things out, make new friends, and share experiences with each other that way.
So, question for you on the community piece. I love that you found a true need and that there wasn't anything like it in the market. I think a lot of people who are considering, and I agree with you, thinking about starting a community versus it just being a natural part of your brand is weird that is an afterthought. But I also wonder too, if brands maybe don't want it to feel like it's just a sales mechanism, right? Like, because the brand starts the community. So how do you take the pressure off of wanting to create a community, but then also feeling concerned that people might not join because it's branded, or they think they're going to get sold to all the time? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think a lot about that as we grow our community and what's allowed, what are we allowed to post? But then at the same time, I think that the community is a great way to allow these women to be part of the design process. And because the most important thing is making sure that the customers can get dressed easily and all these things. And so I think the way to get around that is to say, yes, you on this platform, you can talk about everything, make girlfriends. We're not going to pound you with sales, but if you're interested and you want to be that fashion designer that you always wanted to be, come chat with our designers and give us input and tell us what you want to see. And
oh, that's cool. I like that. So it's like just a natural integration with the people that they're already used to interfacing with almost.
Exactly. And when they see their designs come to life, they're going to want to buy it. You know, that's exactly what they said. Oh my God, I needed, you know, tights that were accessible because it's so hard to wear tights when I'm in a wheelchair. And then all of a sudden we create that for them. And they're going to think, I need to buy this. You know, I was part of this process. And so in that way, I can weave the brand and our products really closely with our community and make it an authentic experience.
Smart. That's really smart. I love that. And I hope people listening, for those who have contemplated starting a community, they can take some pointers from that. What advice would you have for entrepreneurs who, or people who want to become entrepreneurs? Maybe they have a little slice of entrepreneurial spirit, but they don't know how to get started. What advice would you give them?
Yeah, I think that you just have to do it, and it doesn't matter. You don't have to go full force and quit your job tomorrow. What I did was I was still a full-time student and I started a blog, and then that blog got into Forbes. And then I thought I'll do a Kickstarter. And really this idea started, I think I began writing this blog in the fall of 2018, and now it's the spring of 21 and I'm working on it full-time. And so you don't have to jump right in tomorrow, but you should test your idea, see how it goes on an MVP, a minimal viable product, whether that's a blog or, creating a podcast or creating a small prototype. You can do your full-time job. And then if you really love it and you think, I can't live without this, I the most joy I've ever gotten is building this prototype, then you know that it's time to move on. And you've already validated your unmet need. Maybe you've already built a community because you've started an Instagram page and you start getting more followers, or you did a Kickstarter and you get so many backers and now they're on your email list. You start an email list. You already have a community behind you. And then when you launch your product, when you go full time on your venture, there's already people waiting for you. And so I did
that.
I really liked it.
That's such good advice. And it's such good advice to start now to just evaluate whether or not you enjoy it. Like, that's so smart, because it doesn't have to be an either or, like you're 100% in or you're 100% out. It's like you can dip your toes, figure out if it's something that you really like, and then go from there. So that's awesome. You talked about, you hinted at the future of Intimately earlier, which I love, but where can people find you and keep tabs on what you're going to be doing next?
That's a really good question. So we're actually redoing our website right now. So it's still live, but going to our website might not be the best place. On Instagram, we are growing our community there. And so when we launch our new website, our new community platform, all of our new products, everything will be announced on Instagram. And that also has links to our newsletter that we only do twice a month. It's our creative director. She writes a really thoughtful piece about her life. She lives with a disability, and then talks about the blog post, what's going on in the community. So that's a really great way to stay in touch too. But I would say the Instagram, which is just @intimately.co.
Love it. All right. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. You were amazing, and you are such an inspiration for people who are thinking about doing this, and they might be in college and they now might feel more empowered because they know that they can see someone else has done it. So thank you for that.
Thank you for having me. Your questions were so thoughtful. And, you know, sometimes people ask me questions and I always love answering questions, but I like when people like you ask really deep questions and thoughtful about the future of Intimately and what other partners can do to.
Of course. Well, people want the details, you know, our listeners want the details. So it's always nice to get specific. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Emma, for coming on the podcast. What you're doing is the next big thing. You are not only creating ways for people to find products that are going to help them live better lives, but you're also giving opportunities for customers and people to connect with one another. And I think that that's so brilliant. So thank you for coming on the podcast. I can't wait to see where you take Intimately. And for listeners, if you loved today's episode and you're on Apple Podcasts, please swipe up and give us 5 stars. And if you have some extra time, maybe like an extra minute, feel free to write us a review. It goes a really long way and helps us get in front of more people who would find this type of content valuable. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Emma, for being an incredible guest. And I will catch you guys next week.